Hi, Tristan, it's Michael. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
I am doing super. Do you want to just do this?
Yeah, let's just do it.
Okay. So where are you right now? Are you in Texas?
Yes, I'm in Plano, Texas at my parents' house.
That's awesome.
Right, yeah.
And where are you from originally?
Plano, Texas. So it's just a suburb of Dallas. And however, my parents are from Vietnam, and they moved over here.
So both of your parents were originally from Vietnam, and they moved to Texas from Vietnam, yeah?
Yes, yes.
That is awesome. Is there a big Vietnamese population in and around Dallas?
There is. For some reason, they just migrate over to Texas, and there is also a pretty large Vietnamese population in California as well. I don't know why those two places in particular, but I think it's just kind of word of mouth. You know, when one family member comes over here, then the rest of the family finds out.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, there are pockets of places, right, where people go. Boston, Philadelphia, New York are really popular places, but really in the old days only because there were big ports there. California is an obvious one, obviously, because it's on the coast, but I'm always surprised by Texas, although I'm getting less and less surprised because the more people to whom I speak, the more it feels like there are a lot of communities of people that settle there. It's just really interesting to me.
Right. And the dynamic and just the wave of, you know, different immigrant families and how they spread across the U.S. and start to form these communities within, like, you know, wherever they come over from.
It's pretty amazing. So when did your parents come to the United States?
My mom was 22 and my dad was 17. So they had met here.
God, that's so good.
Yeah. And it was during the war, actually. My dad has, insane war stories from when he escaped communist Vietnam.
So that was in the 70s. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. He was 17, so he was born in 59. Yeah, about the 70s.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how old your dad was. So he's only a little bit older than I am. That's really fascinating. I love these stories. So just so you know, my first time in Vietnam was 1991, a long time ago. And that was before relations between the United States and Vietnam were normalized. So I theoretically was not even allowed in the country, but it was a pretty amazing experience for me. And I wasn't that much older actually than your mother was when she left. I was 24, so 25, but still.
Wow, okay. Yeah, the first time I went to Vietnam was last fall. And it was the first time seeing my motherland. And it was, fascinating because I met my aunt in Ho Chi Minh and she was telling me, you know, my dad's war stories or everything was going on at the same time. And I was like, my aunt was telling me these crazy stories. And in the meantime, I was calling my dad and confirming them with him because these are stories that he's never really shared with me.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, being in that area where he grew up and just hearing this from him, it was just an incredible experience.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, if you think about what your life was like when you were 17, it's not that long ago, right? It's only a few years ago. And if you juxtapose that with what your dad's life was like when he was 17, it's like night and day.
No, for real. And just hearing, like, he almost drowned out in the middle of the sea. And it was funny. I mean, no, not funny. But he was actually stationed at Songkhla, Thailand. That was where, you know, his boat of refugees had landed. And I think at one point he was trying to, what was it? He was on a small fisherman's boat and that had begun to sink. And there was another huge pirate boat that had found them. And he had to make some sacrifices. Like he lost a lot of fellow refugees and other family members. And just hearing all that was just, and you know, I'm just a 17-year-old.
Right, like, just like a regular kid like growing up and like,
yeah, in the suburbs of Texas. And meanwhile, like comparing that to his life and all the stuff that he had to go through was just, I just can't imagine it.
No, it's hard to imagine. I mean, Yeah, it's just really hard to imagine. Do your parents speak Vietnamese to each other? Do they speak English to each other? And are you bilingual?
Yes. They do speak Vietnamese to each other. But, you know, as we've gotten older, we've learned more English, which sure. actually competes with the Vietnamese that they speak at home. So they have six kids. So, you know, it kind of this sequence, like the oldest knows the most Vietnamese.
For sure.
Second oldest knows the next. And then my two younger brothers know hardly any. And so I kind of lucked out since I actually made an effort to communicate with them in Vietnamese. I was able to communicate as I was traveling backpacking through Vietnam, and my aunt didn't speak a word of English, so that was really useful that I knew some broken Vietnamese. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that was why I asked the question, right? Because if you end up in Vietnam, it's likely that this current generation of your family doesn't speak as much English as your parents do, right?
Right.
Right. So that's something. And where do you go to school again? Just refresh my memory.
I'm at the University of Texas in Austin.
You are. So you're in Austin, right? So this is even more interesting to me. So you've essentially spent your born, raised, and educated in Texas. Now, I'm not great with Texas geography, but like Austin can't be that far from Dallas, can it?
It's about a 3.5 hour drive. So it's more south. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But again, it's not like
not terribly far, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like a 10-hour drive. But it's interesting to me that, you know, your parents come literally all the way around the world, right? And you're just born, raised, and educated in Texas. In a way, it's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you hear, like, they come over here, they sacrifice their lives so that their children can live the American dream.
Right.
Quote, unquote, right? And it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I owe them everything. So
it's just fascinating to me. So what do you study at school?
I'm a marketing major with a pre-physical therapy route. So I'm interested in. So as an undergrad, you're not, you know, if you want to study medicine in grad school, then you have to take certain classes and prerequisites that allow you to qualify for grad school. But I didn't want to do the typical, biology major with physical therapy or kinesiology. So I was more fascinated by the intersection between medicine and business and, you know, with a heavy focus in science. So I'm not sure if you're familiar, but there's a lot of flaws in the American healthcare system with lack of, you know, transparency and prices and just crazy costs and the insurance system, just everything is kind of, you know, it's complicated and pretty difficult to grasp at times. But I just wanted to kind of delve into that. And I think marketing gives me a better business acumen. And I've taken, you know, finance classes, accounting classes. So I'm getting the best of both worlds, I guess, going down kind of the split pathway.
Right.
But, and that's what kind of got me into this internship in Bangkok. It was a medical tourism marketing internship. So it's a marketing internship for a medical tourism company called Medical Departures.
Right. We'll get to Medical Departures in a second first. I'm curious though, why you decided to do this program in the first place, right? So,
right.
And particularly, and knowing a little bit about the program as I do know, like, why did you choose to go to Thailand as opposed to going to China or anywhere else in the world? Like, what was the thought process there?
Well, I had already been to Thailand, actually only, 6 months before my internship started, 6 or 7 months. I studied abroad in Thailand last fall.
Oh, where?
Bangkok at Thammasat University.
At Thammasat, okay. So you're at the University of Texas at Austin and you decide you want to do a study abroad program as well. And you did your study abroad at Thammasat. And when you were here for how long? 6 months?
I was there for 6 months. Yeah. And I loved it so much. You could say I just really felt at home there. And it was an incredible journey and just everything from the food and the landscapes and the people, you know, that's really what captivated me.
Yeah.
As well as just the huge opportunities there is. I mean, in you learn about, I mean, when I was taking classes, I was taking like a business opportunities in Thailand, and you learn about the huge diversity hub and fintechs and startups, medical startups, hospitals, these huge businesses that are just blooming out of Bangkok, and they have a lot of ties to the global market too.
Right. So when you decided you were going to come to Thammasat and to Bangkok for your study abroad, had you been in this part of Asia before? You mentioned you had only been to Vietnam. So this was your first trip, right?
No, I'm sorry. To be clear, I went to Vietnam last semester when I studied abroad.
That's what I mean though, right?
So yeah, yeah.
Those two things happened almost concurrently.
Right, right.
But prior to that, you had never been back in Asia. Back is the wrong word. You'd never been in Asia.
No, I hadn't. No.
So what did your mom and dad think? You were like, hey, I'm going to go to Thailand for, you know, for study abroad. And while I'm there, I'll just pop over because it's Vietnam's really close, right? I'll just pop over to Vietnam. What did they say? What did they think?
More than anything, they were just worried about, you know, you hear all these things on the news. My mom hadn't been back in 20 years, and everything she knows of it is what she sees on the news. So she hears all this crime happening because that's what it is, right? That's what you see on the news. It's hardly ever the good stuff.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
Right. Or, this dangerous crime happening, but they were worried out of their minds for my safety. And my mom would say this, and I don't know if like I should share it, but she would be like, why are you going to a developing country to study and find opportunities when people from developing countries come to America to do the same, right?
And what was your answer? Because it's a good question. I have a really great answer, by the way. I'm curious what your answer is.
I mean, my answer is simply, I try not to view so much as like privilege, like, oh, we, you know, grew up in America, we have everything. Like, I want to go out and see the world and explore what there's to offer. I mean, there's something to learn from every situation and every environment. And I knew that I probably could learn so much more out of the classroom and just being in a foreign country, learning, trying to pick up the language, learning the people and the culture. That's so much more, you know, engaging and captivating to me than maybe just being stuck in the suburbs, quote unquote, right? And I just, and I never thought like for one second that it was, oh, I'm going to a developing country and it's, you know, I'm not gonna be able to learn as much, you know, because the environment, it was a developing country. Like, I just think it was kind of ironic, the situation.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting too, right? And there's a real powerful sort of immigrant mindset, which I remember from, you know, my grandparents, because my grandparents immigrated from Eastern Europe. And there's this concept of, we didn't come all the way here and work really hard and succeed to then have you go back to where we came from.
Right.
Kind of thing. But the reality is that particularly in the startup world, Thammasat obviously is a great university, top two, top three in Thailand, and world renowned, to be fair. But also in Bangkok, in Vietnam, in the Philippines, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Southeast Asia, overall, there's a ton of opportunity. And because there's a sort of technological leapfrogging,
right,
there are great things to learn from a mobile perspective. But more than that, because the pie in the U.S. isn't really growing so much, when you do something new, you're, in a way, you're taking market share away from somebody else. But in Southeast Asia, if you build something, you're just adding to the pie and making it bigger. It's a very different dynamic. And for me, that's exciting.
Oh,
in a way, it makes me learn more, if that makes sense.
No, that's a great point. I mean, a lot of what goes on in America, it's already been done, right? They're just modifications of it. But introducing it to these countries that haven't ever seen it before, yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, I think so. So, dude, were you nervous at all before you left? I guess you'd already kind of been here for school, but when you came for school at the beginning, were you a little bit nervous? I mean, your parents obviously put a little bit of fear into your head, but it seems like maybe if you didn't really ignore it, you just kind of put it aside and said, I'm doing this anyway, right? But were you scared at all?
I I can't say that I was. I don't know. I was
good for you.
Way too excited to be scared. I mean, I think to some extent I should have had some worry in a way. I don't know. I think it was just too good of an opportunity to let any fears hold me back, you know? And so I just went head on. Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I was doing my study abroad, I went literally as far away as I possibly could. So I went to Japan, and I don't think you coming to Thailand is really any different than me going from Connecticut to Japan.
Right.
It feels the same. Yeah, and everybody thought I was insane at the time as well. They're like, why are you going there and not going to, frankly, when I was in college, all the kids that studied abroad went to Europe.
Europe, right. No, that's the case at UT Austin as well.
Right. I would think that that's not much different today than it was than when I was in school. So finally, you went home in between?
Yes.
You went back to Texas and came back here for your internship?
I went back to Texas for a semester, yes.
Okay, for a whole semester. Did you feel, this is really interesting to me.
Reverse culture shock.
Let's talk about because reverse culture shock is really weird, right? Like, did you feel different when you got home?
I felt really kind of out of it for a couple of months. I think just coming back to Texas, you know, I found myself missing, I mean, Bangkok so much because it's so unique in every aspect.
Yeah.
I mean, the street food, like, you know, you can walk out on the street at 2 a.m. in Austin and find like a dollar bowl of, noodles or pad thai. Yeah. But more than that, I miss the people that I grew to become really close with, because there was a group of other international students. They were mostly from Europe, and I was traveling all over with them, but also studying with them and living in the same apartment complex. And I miss them a lot, you know, and you kind of develop this close knit community. And I feel like I didn't have that back in Austin. My friends were kind of scattered everywhere, and I think I just didn't have a solid friend group, and that kind of made it hard. And on top of that, it was the hardest semester academically. I was taking finance and biochem and genetics all in one semester. It was really tough for me.
So what do you learn from this? Like, one of the things that I took away when I was in school was the harder things got, the more intense my relationships got with people. And when you live overseas, it just means that every single day is new, right? Every experience is new. And when you go through that with somebody, it like bonds you really tightly, no?
No, and incredibly so. I mean, I wouldn't even say that it's, you know, we're going through a tough situation, but I do agree with that. Like, every day was new. And I mean, I spent more time with them than I have with anyone, right? Because you're
right.
You live in the same complex, you study, you travel, and it's almost like 24 hours a day, and you're bonding so much. And it's such a unique situation, study abroad and interning abroad. I mean,
it is.
Yeah, it's.
So you must have been really looking forward to when that new semester ended, when you got back to Texas, and then you just essentially came right back to Thailand, right? Which is kind of cool, I think. So when you did that, did your parents just think like, okay, she's a little bit insane?
My mom was like,
or were they at least used to it? Or
no, my mom was like, are you kidding me? She was actually really upset. She was
really?
Like, yeah, because she was like, she was worrying the entire semester that I was gone. And then she's like, now you're just going to make me worry again. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I think it's natural for Vietnamese people to just constantly worry. And even my uncle I was going to Thailand, he was just like, why is that necessary? Just that's it, you know. He found like there was no reason for me to leave America because we're comfortable here. And I think that's what I was straying away from, comfort, you know.
Oh my God, I think that's going to be the title of this episode. Why is that necessary? That's so good. So you come to Thailand. You'd been here before. Where did you live when you were here?
I lived in Amarin Mansion, Arun Amarin Samsipkao.
Samsipkao, okay, on 39. And you worked at Medical Departures. Where was the office?
Oh, I'm sorry. I lived actually in Charming Residence, so that was Sukhumvit. I was thinking of for study abroad, but interning, I lived in Sukhumvit, Yusipsong, so Sukhumvit 22 at,
Yeah, it makes sense. And where was the medical departures office?
It was Prahram Gao, so like Grand Plaza. Nine, it was the G Tower.
Got it. Yeah, that's a nice building, actually. And what was that experience like? And how did you I always forget, like, did you choose that? Did they choose you? How does that work?
It was a consensual sort of application, right? So they would, we would interview maybe a list. Well, we were given a list of potential companies and then we could research them and then choose which ones we wanted to interview with. But then they would also have to have chosen us through the interview process. So I think that was really cool with Next Step Connections. They were the liaison between the student from one part of the world to the company on the other part of the world. And Next Step Connections made it really easy for the whole interview process and communicating.
Yeah, I mean, that part's hard. International communications, even with Skype, even with Line, even with WhatsApp and stuff, still ends up being, like, non-trivial. It's still hard to do.
No, exactly. I mean, with the time change and everything as well.
Right. So think about it. Where you are, what is it, 11:30 in the morning, and it's 11:30 at night for me.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No. I'm up anyway. That's not a big deal. So what were you doing at Medical Departures? And I guess the previous question to that would be, did you know that that company existed when you were here studying abroad? Did you do any work in the startup community or in the startup world when you were here the first time?
I actually hadn't had any experience doing working with a startup company. And I didn't know Medical Departures specifically, but I was aware of or familiar with medical tourism as an industry. I just didn't know there was a platform out there that made it so easy.
It's pretty amazing. So I, full disclosure, I sit on the advisory board of Medical Departures and I've known Paul McTaggart for 4 or 5 years, right? But I think it's an amazing company, but I'm a little biased, right? To be fair.
Right.
But I was still curious about what's your view now that you've worked there, if you sort of juxtapose what you thought about medical tourism in Southeast Asia before you arrived and what you found out about it after you got here, what's the difference?
Oh, I mean, simply put, you think that, you know, if you get a root canal in Thailand, it's, they're going to do a shitty job. Excuse my language, but.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You think it's, again, it's a developing country. So we have these preconceived notions that why would you ever get a hip replacement or a nose job, you know, in Thailand when, I mean, although it's expensive in the US, it's, we're almost guaranteed it'll be better care. But then I realized these are internationally acclaimed hospitals. And I've had friends actually through Next Step Connections who interned at those hospitals and they said they're like 5-star hotels. They are.
So if you go to Bumrungrad, it really is like a 5-star hotel in Samtiva. And some of these hospitals are amazing, right?
Yeah. And I was actually getting so much insight and having to do the research myself, I discovered very soon or very early on that this type of treatment is very professional and high quality. And it's just easy for us to make these assumptions that it won't be. But I mean, these doctors, they have to get, a lot of them do get certified and go to med school in Europe or the US and.
Or in America, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the deeper question for me always is, after you go through an experience like that where the things that you thought were true were proven wrong by your own sort of face-to-face experience with just a different reality that you hadn't imagined, what does it do to your thought process when you encounter a new situation or you, do you know what I mean? When you have to experience something new beforehand, how does it change the way you perceive those things in the sense that are you more open-minded now?
No, absolutely.
Open to new things?
I've always tried to be open-minded, but even experiencing something that's, you know, when you come in expecting one thing and another thing completely changes that, then it opens your perspective, but also it allows you to not have these judgments beforehand, right? And even sometimes though, those judgments can be overbearing and stereotypes and news and everything that you've heard about this particular situation, it can be overpowering, but I think at the end of the day, you have to trust that there are exceptions, you know, or there's just, I mean, that's just eliminating the bias, right, behind it all. And I think that's really important coming into any new situation.
Right. I think you've just stated it really perfectly. This whole concept of you have to know that you have a bias. And the only way to understand that is to put yourself in a situation where your bias gets exposed to you and you realize, wait a second, I was wrong.
Right.
Because then when you go into another situation that's new, before you get there, you can say to yourself, what is my bias?
Yeah.
And if I have it before,
it, right?
If I know what it is, because this is all whole concept of being self-aware, right? But if I understand what my bias is before I go into a new situation, then my mind is much more open to understanding what the reality is as opposed to what I think that reality is, right? And I had a conversation, you know, with students here over the summer where someone said to me, I knew this about Thailand before I arrived. And I said, here's where you have to be really careful. What you think you know and what you actually know are completely different things.
Right. And even for me, having gone to Thailand once, it was almost as if I've had those discoveries of like, okay, I had this bias, but now I need to be more open-minded and not expect a certain thing. But then even the second time around coming back, like those sort of epiphanies were still happening where.
Right.
And now that I've already been to Thailand once, I think I have these, you know, these biases. But then when I come back, it can still be argued and it can still be different than what I expect even the second time.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, even at my age, right, I still enter new situations and I always try to figure out what's my bias and I'm open to other people's opinions. I always say like I have an opinion, but I don't have a monopoly on the right opinion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who knew this would become like a psychology talk? I love it.
It always does.
Yeah.
So tell me this before I let you go. Now that are you graduating this year? End of summer of 2019. Yeah.
I think I'm graduating a semester late. So
got it.
May or fall 2019 in a year.
Oh, okay.
And a half. Yeah.
Got it. But now that you're back on campus, right, your study abroad stuff is over. I presume your internship availability is also over as well, right? But that means now it's up to you to sort of mentor other students and tell other students how good, how bad, or indifferent the experience was. Do you get a chance to do that on campus as well?
Yes. And actually, I have a really good opportunity to do so because I applied for a scholarship to be able to intern through Next Step Connections in Bangkok. And the scholarship with the condition that we have some sort of service project on the semester we return. And
awesome.
And it was to share our experiences on interning abroad, but also to encourage other students to do the same, particularly in Southeast Asia, because the scholarship I got was Freeman to Asia, and they want to encourage more students to come to study and intern in Asian countries.
Fair enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you would encourage other students to do the same thing. I remember when I came back from my study abroad and just like my whole life changed. It actually did change my entire life, right? I studied abroad in Japan and then I lived and worked in Japan after college for 22 years and I've never come back to the United States to live and work. I did after I graduated, but 2 years in, I moved to Japan and then I moved to Thailand and I've never been back in the States since for work ever.
What? That's crazy. I feel like that you might have just predicted my life. I don't know. Maybe in Thailand.
I think I just predicted your future.
No, but actually, I haven't even talked about my plastic pollution prevention project. Whoa, that was an alliteration.
Tell me.
When I was in Thailand, the plastic pollution is insane, right? You see 7-Eleven handing out 6 plastic bags for 2 bags of chips or a plastic straw with a water bottle that's put in a plastic bag. It's, you know, it's insane. So I was aware of the problem the first time around, and I came back and I was like, I can't just watch this unfold. And so I started reaching out to the nonprofit organizations like Trash Hero Bangkok, which is one of the chapters of Trash Hero World, which, you know, they go around cleaning up cities and beaches and trying to implement long-term behavior change and so that people are more aware of like the single-use items that they use. And I became so invested into this sort of passion that I decided to commit to trying to live zero waste. And that means composting the food that I eat, even though, you know, I lived in an apartment. So I was able to drop off the compost to a place called Scholars of Sustenance that would do the composting. And refusing single-use plastics, so carrying around Tupperware, tote bags, bamboo straws, bamboo cutlery, and everything. So it was very extreme. But no, one of the projects I worked on was actually doing a cleanup in partnership with Trash Hero. So we cleaned up Rama 9, and I think that really inspired me more than anything to keep working at this. And that's one of the things I'm hoping to do coming back to Austin.
That's one of the questions that I always ask people is, like, did this really change your life? And it really sounds to me like this changed your life, right, in a way. And I was having that conversation with somebody tonight, actually, on the way back from, you know, a Family Mart. Do you really need that straw? And how many people use a straw single use every single day in the world that's plastic? It's probably a billion people. That's a billion straws. It's just too many straws, right?
Yeah, and particularly, I'm sure you're aware of the problem in Thailand. I mean, 8 plastic bags are used a day from the average Thai person.
I didn't know that.
It's just some absurd. Yeah, that's absurd because, I mean, I was doing the math earlier. I was like, that's 2,920 bags a year versus like the average person in UK who uses maybe 150 in a year.
Right. And we were actually talking about this today too. So the CP group through their 7-Eleven subsidiary or wholly owned subsidiary has decided that they're going to give out reusable bags that have barcodes on them and reward people for carrying those bags as opposed to getting plastic bags from the store. For giving them like a free cup of coffee or something. I forget what the benefits were, but it's just another step forward in the process that.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Like you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a new thing, but it's that process that goes through that really changes people's behavior. Like you said, long-term behavior change is hard to do, but it's important to try it.
No, exactly. And you know, a lot of times I felt useless. Everything I did, it felt futile because I was here in Thailand for 2 months. It's like, how can I have the biggest impact while I'm here for just a short amount of time? And so the cleanup really introduced me to a lot of passionate Thai people. And I think they were also fascinated that I created this event, you know, as a foreigner where like a lot of the Thai people, they're just not aware of or they're not cognizant of the waste that they're producing. So I got into contact with a lot of them and they've also just been posting a lot on social media to help bring the awareness to people. And I think that was really, you know, what changed me and that very, very much like kind of fulfilled this whole internship, even though it had nothing to do with medical departures or medical tourism. It was just a fascinating experience for me.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I mean, look, it's been really, really great talking to you. I really appreciate your time. And I just want to say thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was great talking to you too.